The Business on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Ulster Bank, where our business experts get to know you, not just your business. Find out more at ulsterbank.ie/businessmatters.
No doubt many of you will be having a drop of whiskey beside the fire over the next few days, and if so, you're probably spoiled for choice when it comes to Irish whiskey. The industry has seen its fair share of ups and downs over the past century, but is on something of a renaissance. I've been catching up on the past, present and future of Irish whiskey with the people who distill it.
Hey, whiskey, you're the devil, you're leading me astray. Over hills and mountains and to America. Your sweet or stronger days and are your spunky are not tame. Oh, whiskey, oh, me darling, drunk or sober.
Irish whiskey goes back into lots and lots of people distilling.
If anyone can tell me the history of whiskey in Ireland, it's former director at Cooley Distillery, Willie MacArthur.
I still have an association with Cooley, now Beam Suntory.
Willie says a century ago, Irish whiskey was the top dog.
You had various entrepreneurs over Ireland, like the Jemison family, the Power family. And there's no doubt that from about 1840 to 1900, Irish was the premier whiskey import into the US. It was a booming industry.
Ireland's hold over the world spirits trade didn't last, though.
The absolutely main reason why the Irish whiskey industry collapsed was American prohibition that people may not know lasted from about 1919 until 1933.
One of these, sir.
Booze.
Sorry, sir, we only serve coffee.
Coffee?
Scotch coffee, Canadian coffee, sour mash coffee.
Scotch, regular Demitasse, soda on the side.
In an industry which relied a lot in the American market, people just couldn't import and couldn't sell drink, couldn't sell any whiskey or any alcoholic beverage. That really scuppered the industry.
Prohibition in the US was just the start of the problems Irish whiskey would face.
Like every industry, there was always a disruptor.
In this case, it was an Irish inventor and distiller by the name of Aeneas Coffey.
And he invented a thing called the coffee still, or what might be more commonly known now as a column or patent still, which was a means of taking grain and converting it into alcohol in a very cost-efficient manner.
Even though this method is commonplace now, back then Irish distillers resisted it.
And particularly the Dublin and to a certain extent the Cork distilleries fought this right until, in fact I think it was probably 1970.
In the meantime, Scottish entrepreneurs like Johnny Walker had embraced the method wholeheartedly, and Scotch became the world's preferred spirit.
Yes, Scotch whiskey is the true product of Scotland. And it cannot be made anywhere else.
If it has a Louth registration or Northern Ireland registration, it's maize that's come from France through Warren Point. If it's a Cork registration, it's barley, malted barley coming up from Cork.
To find out how Irish whiskey was brought back from the brink, I've come to the Great Northern Distillery in Dundalk, where Chairman John Teeling is showing me around the site, which was formerly the Harp Lager Brewery.
So when Diageo ran a 24/7, canteen, free, wonderful. There was a thing called the Harp Stone. If you got a job, you got your lunch here, your dinner here, it was really good quality. There was a chef and two waitresses. So you put on a stone because you went home and had your dinner. It's called the Harp Stone. Now, would you like to predict how long that lasted?
One day.
We now provide tea and coffee and milk.
There isn't even a Great Northern Distillery ounce, is there? Or pound, never mind a stone.
I should hope not. We're into fitness.
Irish whiskey made a slow but steady resurgence in the 80s when John Teeling founded Cooley Distillery in Louth.
I would love to say it was our work breaking the monopoly. People say it and I don't disabuse them of the notion. The reality of it is we did one thing, but it was, let me tell you, the reality is young people. Young people's music is not the music that their parents understand or listen to. Young people's foods are different. Young people's clothes are different. And when they drink, they don't want to drink what the dinosaurs, their parents or their grandparents drink, and they want it themselves. And the real change came in the States around the year 2000 with the discovery by young people of bourbon. It's no mistake that Jim Beam came and bought us because they made so much money from bourbon because they had the inventory. And bourbon is still good, but it's not as good a product for young people as Irish. Irish is sweeter, more attuned to their tastes. They just wanted a different taste. Scotch didn't have the taste. You go to Copperface Jack's, they'd be drinking Manhattans. They'd be drinking whiskey cocktails. And it's young women are drinking whiskey cocktails. So that's it. Change in taste, which is good. It gives you a couple of generations because what you drink in your 30s, you don't change.
Oh, there we are. Oh, here we are. Brian, Alan and Margaret.
How are you doing?
He's getting the gospel according to John Teeling. Hey, how come? Where's my distillery cask? You wouldn't need that if you had a distillery cask. What happened to him? Did the rats eat him?
That's gone. He's gone a long, long time. I think he got fed up.
You thought of an answer very quickly there.
There's always, almost always, not modern ones, of course, there's always a distillery cat because the grain brings birds and mice and rats.
And the cats eat them. They're always big fat things. Right, work is done. Now, goes out to the fermenters.
When you sold Cooley Whiskey, your sons decided to set up Teeling Whiskey, a very successful branded whiskey venture. You decided to go into the more bulk distilling. Why did you not go with the branded idea? And why did you stick with the manufacturing, the distilling end of it?
Probably or possibly a mistake, but I think not. Jack and Stephen weren't happy that we sold Cooley, and they're still not. Because I said, look what would have happened if we'd have kept it over the last 5 years. And they may be right. My justification is you would have known some of my shareholders have been with me for 24 years and never got a thing except a bottle of whiskey if they turned up at the AGM. They didn't get it if they didn't. So I was comfortable with it. There was no non-compete because Jim Beam decided that they were only going to sell branded product. Now, they didn't do that as it happened. They will do it again. So Jack and Stephen had a different, Jack in particular, and then followed with Stephen, had a different objective, a wonderful one. He wanted branded and he wanted Dublin-based. I didn't see the Dublin one, and Jack is right and I was wrong, definitely. Because Dublin was the centre of whiskey in Ireland, right through the 19th. All the big distilleries in the world, the three biggest in the world, Powers, Rose and Jemison, three biggest distilleries in the world for anything, were all within a mile of where he's based now, in this so-called golden triangle right outside the Liberties there. And I didn't see that. So Jack said, I'm going to do a brand because the brand is going to give me value. He used a name which I never had the confidence to use. It shocks me now to see how successful it is. If I was doing it again, would I have the confidence? Possibly not. I've been wrong a few times.
So now we're off to Slane Distillery.
So we're currently in a room called the Tack Room, and that's because it was actually a tack room prior to the restoration. And
Alex Cunningham is the co-founder of Slane Whiskey, here on the grounds of Slane Castle. This tack room, the room in a stables where saddles are kept, is part of the Distillery Visitor Centre.
Visitor centres for Irish whiskey brands are a huge opportunity. The benefits for tourism as a sector are huge. I mean, we, in 2016, over 730,000 people came to visit whiskey distilleries in Ireland. That grew by over 12% on the previous year, and it's moving in a very exciting direction. So it's a major boost to the Irish tourism economy. We are surrounded here by the fields that grow the barley, which will be coming into the distillery. And then, of course, we've got the concert site on the footstep of the distillery as well. So we're going to be pushing this place as a destination. It's not just come for an hour. We'd like to be able to offer a more expansive experience.
I'm sure you could sell quite a lot of whiskey on concert day.
You certainly could, yeah, that's for sure. This year, we did have the whiskey out, just had it actually in the VIP area, which has a capacity of about 2,000 people. So we haven't gone into the main field yet, but we're certainly looking to do that.
I didn't know there were 2,000 VIPs in Ireland.
Those days are coming back by the looks of things, yeah.
We're going to go down to the river first of all and just have a look at the Garavogue. Then we'll come back up and I'll show you the house, and then we'll go to the factory and have a look at the factory. My name is David Raythorn and I'm a director of Causeway Capital, which is a private equity firm based in Dublin and London.
David's latest project is transforming Hazelwood House, an 18th century Palladian-style country house and grounds in Sligo, into Lochgill Distillery to make the whisky brand Ahru.
Like, I can't say I'm a whiskey drinker like everybody else, you know, have drunk whiskey. It wasn't that we, you know, that I had this sort of lifelong ambition because I was involved in the whiskey industry to build a whiskey distillery. But what had happened was, I suppose, over the years, we you know, you'd read things in the paper about the resurgence of whiskey and, you know, all of that, and gradually sort of took an interest in it, did a bit of research, just thought it'd be a pretty cool thing to do to try and build a whiskey distillery.
Hazelwood turned out to be the perfect location. An Italian manufacturing firm had purchased the grounds in 1969 and built a huge factory complex to make nylon rope. Then in the mid-80s to 2005, a South Korean company, Sehan Media, produced videotapes here. And soon, it'll house David's distillery.
So, we're now driving into the factory itself. And you can see, like, we drive around in cars in it because it's easier to get around. So it's 6 acres under roof. It's about 250,000 square feet. It is roughly the size of Dundrum Shopping Centre, the main part of Dundrum Shopping Centre, excluding the car parks.
David's team is also working on restoring the house itself.
Okay, so we're just walking into Hazelwood House. As I said, it was built in 1722. It's a Palladian mansion, 25,000 square feet, 3 floors over a basement. So you can see here, there's some water damage. Like, the building is pretty intact considering it's so old. The story I heard, when the guys from Sehan arrived, their plant, SNIA, had used this as their headquarters, so it had been in use as an office building. So in 1985, when Sehan arrived, they had planned to use it as their office building. They had started working some of the renovations, made some changes to some of the floors, and apparently one of the guys, the Korean guys, saw a ghost and shut down the project, and they refused to use it, so the building was locked up and it went into a bit of a state of disrepair. So some of the roofs are damaged, and as a result you see some water damage here. So it was never actually used as an office. Longer term, we were trying to create an estate that we can bring people to that won't just have a distillery, we'll have lots of other activities. But in the short term, that's all going to be funded, I suppose, by the whisky itself. So first and foremost, we have to get the distillery operational, but that will include a visitor section to it.
With more and more distilleries opening up around the country, the industry is, well, as Willie MacArthur says,
Irish whisky is far and away the fastest growing spirit in the world.
When yourself and John Teeling sat down and met each other in that bar in 1970, did you have any idea that the industry would take off the way it has, and that together you'd build Cooley Whisky, a business that ended up being worth over 100 million euro?
Well, I keep telling John that we had, or trying to remind him, and he pours cold water on this, so somewhere in between, I'm sure, is the answer.